Hi, this is Mary Hassan with Personal Identity Project, and I have the great pleasure today to be speaking with Jennifer Lahl. And Jennifer is the president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture. And she is known to many of us as a documentary maker, a filmmaker, and a tremendous advocate for women, particularly in the whole area of surrogacy and speaking up for those who are really being exploited. She's done some tremendous documentaries about that topic. But today we're going to be talking to her about her latest documentary, which is just a fabulous, fabulous production. And it's called Transmission: What's the Rush to Reassign Gender? So Jennifer, welcome.
Well, thank you, Mary. It's good to be with you in person.
That's right. Yeah, so Jennifer hails from California. So she's all the way here in D.C. and we're delighted to have her. So I wanted to just talk with you first. Well, first, let me ask you to sum up how you would explain the documentary to people. Like, what if someone says, so what's your latest project? What were you working on? How would you sum that up?
Yeah, it's a documentary film that's focused on the debate that's happening all over the United States and around the world around the issue of allowing people to transition to a different sex. So this whole notion of being born in the wrong body. And it's specifically focused on the debate as it pertains to children. I was a pediatric critical care nurse for almost two decades. So I'm very interested in the intersection of medicine and ethics as it relates to children in this space on transgenderism.
I had forgotten you were a critical care nurse because I knew that now that you said that.
In a previous life.
Yes. Well, you have done some tremendous work on surrogacy. So, which one of the things you unpacked and I know helped me to see was just how people can be sort of, I don't want to say sucked into it, but drawn into participating in surrogacy for what can seem like good motives. And I'm curious what your evolution was to go from focusing so much on bioethics concerns, which certainly the whole gender ideology and transitioning kids falls under, but really that expertise in surrogacy and the concern for the exploited and the concern for medicine making money on people's vulnerabilities. How did that lead you to this whole question of transgenders?
Yeah, I've been asked that a lot, and it really was a transition, and not in the sense of transgender transition. And I don't like mission creep, so I wanted to stay very focused in the work that I was doing, and I wanted to be clear that I wasn't allowing some other agenda sort of to creep into my life's focus. But I have made films on egg donation, sperm donation, surrogacy, so this whole notion of third-party conception. But what I saw shifting with this embracing of a technology that I find hugely problematic, assisted reproductive technology, was men started having babies. And then trans men and trans women started having babies. And then a study came out that said trans women, which means biological males, right, want access to uterine transplants. And then I found out in this whole debate around the transitioning of children, that children are offered fertility preservation. So they're offered to bank their eggs or sperm before they transition to the other sex, and your audience can't see my scare quotes around transitioning. Right. So I just thought, well, because of my interest in medicine, ethics, science, technology, and my background in pediatric nursing, I had to make a film because I worked with these kinds of children in the hospital that were, you know, either ambiguous genitalia or intersex. Yeah. And the old way was wait. You know, the tagline of the film is, what's the rush? And in the olden days, maybe parents were more anxious to rush. And the doctors were saying, no, we need to wait and see. Mm-hmm. We need to wait and see. There's no rush here. Mm-hmm. And then medicine decided to jump on the rush train and the profit train and the corruption of what I would call good Hippocratic medicine.
Yeah. I've always found it very interesting that Dr. John Money, who, you know, is the one who really conceived of this idea of gender as applied to persons, and the idea that your biological sex and your social identity can be separated. I found it very interesting when I found out that his own background was working with children and adults who had these disorders of sexual development. And he was also working with some of the transsexual population. So his frame of reference for even talking about gender was working with people for whom he saw a dichotomy. He saw a divide. And then he applied that to sort of the world at large. And so I'm intrigued by that progression for you, especially in seeing what happens with these children where they're recommending these fertility preservation techniques, which are so speculative anyway. But so anyway, it's just a fascinating connection between all of these aspects of medicine.
Yeah, and it brings in, you know, the whole layer of informed consent, because in the case of children, it's oftentimes should be rightly parents that are giving that consent, because children cannot imagine what all these risks are, short and long term. I can't imagine a 12 or 13 or 14 year old child being offered fertility preservation as if they can imagine, you know, I raised four kids. I mean, they have a hard time cleaning up their room or getting their homework done, let alone.
Or imagining that first kiss, not to even think, you know, down the road. They don't want kids at 12, you know, so why is it even a concern for them? They're not going to react in a mature way.
It's really, so it was really concerning to me. And so we're really pleased the film has not even been out for a month. We've had over 40,000 people that have watched it. Overwhelmingly, the comments have been very favorable. We thought immediately, because it's free to watch on YouTube, we thought YouTube would pull it. You know, you've seen what happened with Ryan Anderson's book and Abigail Schreier's book. So we had it. We have it also on Vimeo as our backup plan in case one day we wake up and the film's been removed.
Right.
What we're finding, though, through our social media data, and it gets back to sort of another layer of the film, is sort of what happens when you speak out and you don't toe the party line. People aren't liking or sharing it. People are watching it, but I think because once you like or share something, you've outed yourself.
Right.
You're tagged. Watch this film. It's really great. Mm-hmm. And so while we've been incredibly encouraged by the number of people who've watched it and the comments being overwhelmingly positive, there's still that hesitancy because people know they could lose their job. You know, their neighbors would stop talking to them. You know, they'd stop being invited to all the fancy parties.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that because in watching in the film, one of the things I was struck by was, in a sense, how the person who begins watching it is not confronted first with you editorializing or anything. You're just letting people talk, and you're bringing in all sorts of different voices, from radical feminists to people who had transitioned and detransitioned to physicians who were on both sides of the issue. So I thought, to your credit, I thought it was just a fantastic blending of these different perspectives, and yet still there's a message that I think is inescapable. It should give people pause, not to rush.
Yeah, and that, I mean, is a stylistic decision as documentary films. You know, people have been critical of my work in the past, like on my surrogacy films or my exploitation film. You only interview the surrogates who had bad experiences. You only interview the egg donors that had bad experiences. And I said, well, that's because it's a documentary film, and documentary is not journalism.
Right.
You can just document a story. Mm-hmm. So we intentionally brought in those opposing voices on this film. Knowing that that's been sort of a criticism of my past work, and there were people that are colleagues and friends of mine that were just dead set against allowing them any space because they hog up all the energy in the debate. You know, the people that are pro, and you know, I was just really comfortable allowing. We had actually two people that, you know, one's a psychiatrist and one's a pediatrician who are in favor of this and pro. Affirming gender ideology. And I think it worked well. And again, you know, to me, truth stands alone. You don't have to be overhanded and heavy, you know, fisted and pushing a message. We didn't want it to feel like a propaganda piece.
Yeah, no, I thought you did a great job. And just to clarify for our listeners, too, you know, the whole situation with someone who is expressing a transgender identity, what's different about them from someone who has a disorder of sexual development is they have a perfectly healthy body. And yet their feelings and their self-perception becomes disconnected or alienated from the reality of their sex body. And then they have this driving desire to transition, to become or to live as or to present as. There are all different ways to phrase it, the opposite sex or something else, you know, create your own, quote, gender or identity. So that's one of the key distinctions here is that you're starting with someone who's healthy. So when you approach these the pediatrician, for example, Dr. Forcier, mm-hmm. is that how you say it?
Michelle Forcier, uh-huh.
Yeah. So what was her reaction? You reached out to her and you said you're doing this documentary relating to kids and transitioning. What was her reaction?
Very favorable. I mean, almost immediately she responded to my email inquiry, just explaining I was a documentary filmmaker. I was a past pediatric critical care nurse. I had a keen interest in this whole issue around the whether we should allow children to transition or not. And she agreed to be in the film. I was actually kind of shocked because I just figured the first thing I usually do is Google people when I get emails from people I don't know. You know, who is this person? What's their right. bias? What's their right. what's their slant? What's their, you know, their CV look like? I was, and then the other woman actually was a friend of a colleague of mine. And so she actually made the introduction to that person. And she agreed to be in the film. Mm-hmm. So, I was pleasantly surprised with how easy it went to get her to go on camera. I think she had a little bit of reservations after the fact. Mm-hmm. But by then, you know, the interview had been done, and I just assured her that
you would be fair.
I wasn't trying to punk her or set her up to, you know, to look ridiculous. I mean, she's a legitimate, credentialed mm-hmm. medical doctor. She just has a very... we just have very different points of view on how to treat these children. And I recognize that there are children that are, for lack of a better word, gender confused, gender dysphoric. Those are real feelings that kids have to have. One of the doctors that we interviewed, Dr. Paul Pruse, who I just think is just an amazing, brilliant
tremendous.
Man.
Yeah.
He said, you know, not allowing children to transition doesn't mean we do nothing for these children.
Right.
It's not like that's the only thing we have to offer these children.
But I think that's a common misperception, mm-hmm. which you brought out very well, I thought, in the documentary, just, you know, through the different voices, is that what parents are told is that if your child is feeling, you know, this confusion or even this sense of certainty that they want to go down a different road and, you know, apart from their sex body, they are someone else, that parents, one, need to rush, they need to do something, and that the only option is really to go down this path of the puberty, well, social transition and puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones and then maybe the mastectomy and you know, the whole works. But Dr. Cruz's point and others is to say that, you know, there are other alternatives. We can watch and wait. We can work with the family. We can create some space to see what the underlying issues might be. We can treat depression on its own. We don't have to just do nothing and leave a child who is seriously depressed at risk of suicide. But that's a very common framing, that there's one path and you need to act now, and it means to go this interventionist route.
Yeah, and what was really unsettling to me when I was speaking with the parents who we interviewed is how many of them were told, and if you don't rush down this path, your child might commit suicide. And several of the parents said that this was told to them by their physician in front of the child. And again, back to my what really gets me agitated as an ex-retired nurse,
yeah.
is that is just horrible thing to dump on a parent, especially in front of a child.
A child. It strikes me as manipulative, actually.
Very coercive.
Yeah.
Very, you know, you will really feel awful. One mother said, the pediatrician said, you will really feel awful if your mm-hmm. child takes her own life.
I remember that from the, yeah.
In front of the child. And you're just like, for heaven's sakes, what has happened to, you know, good, proper medical.
Right. How can you even probe alternatives? How can you even ask questions? How can you even express doubts without it then being framed as you're willing to take that risk? You know, you're putting your child and also it's sort of bad suicide protocol. You're sort of writing a script for someone who's already depressed. You're telling them this is sort of where you
exactly.
expect them to go. That's
yeah. And I think, you know, again, back to Paul Ruse, you know, you've got this family that's obviously very unsettled by this child declaring themselves to be born in the wrong body or very upset. And parents go to their physicians because they're the experts.
Right.
And you want to be able to have trust in your expert physician to give you the best advice. And so I just think it's a real perfect storm for a disaster. And then, you know, again, because parents are consenting, you know, if you're the mom and the dad that are consenting, and then your child grows up to be 25 and decides to detransition because nothing was fixed, nothing was solved, and now, mm-hmm. oh, by the way, I can't have children ever again. My body's permanently mutilated. You know, mm-hmm. there's this whole theme through the film. You know, what's the rush? It's sort of a transmission. It's like a driving. It's a yeah. train going down. And, you know, you can't undo any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's just... I hope legislatively here, I mean, here we are in our nation's capital, I hope that we can see some kind of good laws being passed. You know, right now it's being sort of debated legislatively around sports,
mm-hmm.
Around
which is the
prisons.
Least of the concerns, really, when you think about sports. And I was an athlete, so
yeah.
I'm totally sympathetic to the concerns about women's sports being sort of sidelined or taken over by males. But of all the damage being done, that's far less than the prospects of a young child going down a path that's going to render them infertile, that's going to, you know, amputate their breasts when they're 13, and on and on. It's striking.
And they're being offered, you know, to have breast reconstructive surgery later once they detransition. It's just, you know, I just have to shake
yeah.
my head sometimes at some of the absurdity. And, you know, and again, you know, because this is happening to children, it should never, ever.
So what do you think, from listening to these experts, what was your sense about what changed? In other words, why did we start going down this road? I mean, I know the Dutch pioneered this, but it takes an attitudinal shift to be willing to say, it's one, it's possible that somebody, you're born female, but maybe you're not supposed to be, and we're going to intervene medically. What do you have any sense of what the catalyst was? Or,
you know, for me, it's just kind of a convergence, like sort of that perfect storm when many things come together. I think we've already just seen for quite a while the just erosion of medicine anyway, as a, you know, as a discipline, as a profession. I think the corruption of money, you know, like one of my films, Big Fertility, you know, we have Big Pharma. This is, you know, one of the physicians in Transmission says once you've medicalized a child, you have a patient for life. You know, I live in California. You know, Caitlyn Jenner's running for our governor.
Right,
I mean, Caitlyn Jenner will forever have to take cross-sex, wrong-sex hormones so he can live his masquerade of thinking mm-hmm. he's a woman. So it's, you know, the corruption of medicine, the collusion of money, and then the society. I mean, kids are, we know they're being exposed to massive amounts of pornography at very young ages. They're on TikTok, they're on Instagram, they're on Snapchat. They're just seeing this Hollywood stream of bombarding. You know, education has eroded so that all kinds of things are being taught in schools to the point where, you know, I've been watching from California the protests at the school board meetings.
Oh, in Loudoun County. Yeah,
yeah, in Virginia. Yeah. You know, parents, they've had it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's sort of that perfect storm of all these things that we used to hold dear that really mattered to a civil
yeah.
society
mm-hmm.
have just crumbled.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what else can we expect then? Things would just come along fine on their own.
Right. You know, you've certainly in your past work, you've really exposed a lot of the financial corruption, but incentives for people to do bad medicine for the wrong reason. How much of a factor do you think that is here? And how might parents recognize that? What does that look like?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. I haven't been asked that. But I think one is, I mean, we have, you know, Hachi, who's one of the detransitioners that we interviewed in the film. I'm not sure if this, what he said, made it into the final cut of the film when he was talking about going down to Stanford to seeing the surgeon that was, his insurance through his employer was covered. And, you know, this was the first time the surgeon had done this procedure. Of a, you know, sex reassignment procedure. And Hachi says, you could just tell he was really excited. He was getting into this new cutting edge field of medicine, and I was going to be his you know, his
guinea pig.
Yeah. And I think this part made it into the film where Hachi says he felt like a guinea pig because the guy was trying to upsell him.
Yeah, I remember that word.
You know, Hachi
yeah.
just wanted to have his testicles removed, but this guy was trying to have him remove his penis and have the, you know, neo-vagina created, which is a very complicated surgery. But I think, you know, we made this film for parents first. That's our number one target audience. And so our hope is that a million plus parents will see this film, and then they will have the language, the questions. So when they go to that expert physician who's wanting to put them on wrong sex hormones, who's wanting to put them on this gender journey, as Dr. Forsey describes it, the parents can say, no, we're not going to do that. Let's look at what's going on in the home, because a lot of these kids have trauma going on in the home, divorce, abuse, sexual abuse, drug abuse, pornography, what's going on in the school, what's going on in this child's social media time.
Right.
And what are
these peer circles.
Yeah. And just, you know, what's going on in their community. And let's holistically see what we, like you said earlier, deal with these root problems. Because nobody's born in the wrong body.
Right, right, you know, right. Everyone's in exactly the right body, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think is hard for parents when they first have that conversation, when I talked with parents about this, most of them are just sort of blown away. It's like their child comes to them and kind of announces. And the child oftentimes, unfortunately, has been thinking about it or has been encouraged through the school or has been diving into internet information about all this. And so the child has more information about what they want than the parent. I've had parents say, well, I've heard the word transgender, but I didn't know anything about it. And so I think parents start off kind of rocked on their heels. And then when they reach out to the medical experts, then they're vulnerable. So would you recommend that they even go to a doctor who does this sort of thing, or should they stay away? How do they make those? How do they begin to know who to trust?
Yeah, well, I can't even begin to imagine every single person's circle of medical trust. If you have a physician that you know and you trust, and you can have a good, serious conversation with them, I wouldn't say don't go to them. But I do know one of the moms in the film, she had to make several phone calls, and she just point blank asked, you know, are you a gender affirmation physician or not? Mm-hmm. Because she didn't want, she knew enough to know what she didn't want. And when she found a physician that was willing to work with them, that wasn't going to be putting her on this, rushed fast track to gender affirmation therapy, she went, that's where we're going to go. Mm-hmm. But I do think parents have to be wise, and they have to be, again, our hope is that they'll have the questions to ask.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm really worried about the fact that, you say these kids are going to commit suicide. What does the data show? Well, the data shows we don't have good data to make those kind of claims.
Right.
What does the data show about putting a little boy or a little girl on the wrong sex hormones for long periods of time? We don't know. This is human experimentation. So the parents will be able to ask those kind of questions and then hightail it out of the office if the doctor answers the wrong way.
Right, right. Because your documentary does a great job of just bringing forward some of those facts in one coherent narrative in a way that I think parents then can walk away with something. It's like, okay, now I at least know what to ask. Now I know what the concerns are. And I'm not just kind of at the mercy of a child is pushing me and a doctor is pushing, and I don't know what to think.
Even in the film, because we interviewed Colin Wright, who's a PhD evolutionary biologist, I mean, he just nails the science. So, and sometimes I think in this world of gender confusion, it's just, we need to hear the black and white. There's male and there's female.
Right.
And that hasn't changed. Yes, there's a few diversions with, this intersex, an extra X or an extra Y. But those are very, very slim cases. But other than that, you're a boy, you're a girl. And that's, since the beginning of time, it doesn't change.
And I think that's, as a lawyer, one of the things I often do is I look at informed consent documents. And so if you look at the informed consent documents for these gender clinics, they don't promise that they're going to change your sex because they know they can't. And yet these young kids have this image. I think of it as a mirage. They have a mirage in their minds of the person they think they're going to become. That if they can just take the right hormones and just have the right surgeries, they will really be a boy if they were born female, or, that they think there's this some amazing power of transformation beyond the superficial and the constructed. And yet, when you get down to the legal documents, even those who are doing these surgeries are not making those promises because their lawyers won't let them. You cannot change someone's sex. All you can do is feminize their attributes, and you can change and remove body parts, which destroys the function. But you can't create functioning parts of the opposite sex either. All you're doing is creating a facsimile, but it can't function. You know, you can't create male genitalia and put it on a woman and have it work as it's supposed to. It's not going to work. You know, so it's very interesting. But I think in talking with parents, I found most of them, by the time they're already there to read those kinds of documents, it's too late. You know, their kid is invested in this. They feel pushed. And yet, so that kind of truth is not getting out
yeah.
to parents.
And, you know, when the film came out, literally within the first 24 hours, I just got an email from somebody I didn't know. And he just identified himself as a dad who runs a parent support group with several, you know, many, like less than 100, but a really large support group of parents that are out there dealing with, you know, kids that are gender confused. And he's just like over the moon thankful that we made such a film. And so you immediately go, wow, this isn't just something that is on the nightly news. This is happening. It's affecting conservatives and progressives. It's affecting mm-hmm. families that are religious or not religious.
Right.
It's not, you know, it's not a disease that just strikes only particular people. And so we are at one level in this all together for the sake of our kids, our future.
Yeah, and I think it points out something about truth. You know, truth is not ideological. So you mentioned Colin Wright, and he calls himself someone who's leans to the left, and he's not a religious person, and yet he's looking for the truth. And so he looks at the facts. What's the truth about the human person? Same thing with Natasha Chart, who you featured in the documentary. You know, she's a radical feminist, has been for years, but she knows truth when she sees it, and there's a truth about the human body. We're male or female, and then it cannot change. So why are we harming these children? Why are we letting this happen? So to me, it's a very interesting kind of shaking up and realigning, bringing together people to, you know, to advocate on behalf of children based on a common sense of what's true, regardless
yeah.
of what other things we disagree on.
Yeah, about the human person, about our bodies, and what is the purpose of our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our bodies are not just some widget that we have to use as a tool. I mean, we are our bodies.
Right, right. What was the toughest conversation you had in the course of making this?
Oh, I think probably the detransitioners, again, because I can't.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what's
yeah,
for those
so,
who don't know what's a
so
detransitioner?
A detransitioner is somebody who's made the decision to transition to the opposite sex, which it can't be done, but they think they're in the illusion that it can be done, and they could do like the full blown medical surgical transition, or they can partially transition, but they do something that they've transitioned, they now live as the opposite sex, only to find out it didn't solve any of their problems. So they revert back. So they stop taking testosterone, for example, or estrogen. They, you know, reclaim their original name. They start, you know, living and dressing as the sex that they were born. And those stories were just, even though we only spoke to two of those people on the film, I'm quite aware of that growing voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel at the hands of medicine, what has happened that now all these people are just living with shattered lives and ruined bodies
yeah.
As a solution to some kind of dysphoric feelings that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just made me just kind of undone to the mm-hmm. point where I could just easily just like lay my head down and weep.
Yeah,
this is being done at the hands of, you know, good doctors.
Well, at least skilled doctors.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm not sure. Because you just wonder, what is it that would, I don't know. I don't know how a doctor sort of overcomes that natural protective and desire to help and heal. How do you cross that path and then go do a mastectomy on someone's perfectly healthy breasts when they're 14.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's just the warpness of of our sense of rightness and wrongness and good and bad. You know, that I honestly believe that these doctors think that they are doing good. Mm-hmm. I think they honestly, they're not Mengeles. Mm-hmm. They're out there thinking that this is really going to truly help. And they've got the, you know, American Academy of Pediatricians, mm-hmm. you know, pediatrics backing them. They've got the, you know, the Pediatric Endocrine Society right. putting their rubber stamp that this is appropriate therapy and interventions for these types of children. Mm-hmm. So they just kind of go along with it. But then I can be so encouraged when I hear people like Dr. Paul Ruse and Dr. Quentin Van Meter, who are in the film, you know, mm-hmm. and you just go, you know, thank God we have these, mm-hmm. you know, strong voices. And they will give other people cover mm-hmm. that are agreeing. And maybe they won't be outwardly vocal,
right.
but they won't be treating children this way in their practices and stuff. So I have to always be encouraged.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think it was neat to see those two doctors in particular. They were very clear. They were very factual. They were... But you could see their hearts, you know, that they cared about these families who were struggling with these issues and wanted to give a message that there's a better way.
Yeah, yeah. Those are good doctors.
Yeah. It's good to see. So what would be your message? You know, obviously we hope and we'll be encouraging and linking to this and promoting your documentary, because I think it is just really powerful to hear in people's own words, but also to hear the justifications that come from those who are engaged in this and give people a chance to weigh it, to listen to both and see what they think. But what would your message be personally to parents?
It's the tagline of the film is, what's the rush? I mean, we wanted the film to have sort of a feeling of innocence. So when we have, you know, just stock footage of children playing or walking down the street holding their mom's hand or baking cookies or whatever, you know, let children be children. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no rush here. It's not like you have a child that's just been diagnosed with a fatal cancer or mm-hmm. it's just been involved in a, you know, horrible car accident. We have to make decisions now. This is not life and death. You know, don't believe that they'll kill themselves, mm-hmm. Kind of fear-mongering there's no rush. Let's let children be children. Let's protect their innocent little bodies for as long as we can. We've got the rest of our life to have to deal with big adult stuff. Mm-hmm. So let's just let them have this precious little bit of time that they get on earth to just be children.
Yeah. No, well put. So the documentary again is Transmission, What's the Rush to Reassign Gender? And I've been speaking with Jennifer Lal, who is the producer, director of the documentary, but also is the president of the Center for Bioethics and Culture out in California, and is just a tremendous voice, a tremendous advocate for, I think, integrity in medicine and for those who, particularly women and children, those who can easily be exploited by either not knowing what's out there or being taken advantage of by people who are politicizing and monetizing what really should be the helping profession, the caring for others. So, Jennifer, thank you again for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for all you do.